This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Alon Berman, Vice President for Policy at the American Foreign Policy Council here in Washington. He's also the author of the brand new book, Winning the Long War, Retaking the Offensive Against Radical Islam. We want to get his thoughts on two critical issues related to the war. Number one, the efforts to stop the Iranian nuclear weapons program, and also what the president will do in Afghanistan in terms of troop numbers and an overall strategy. And Alon, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, great to be back.
Let's start with Iran. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was in Moscow today meeting with the Russian foreign minister. It's pretty clear from the result of their meeting that we're not very close at all to what many would consider crippling sanctions on Iran that might make them at least briefly reconsider their pursuit of nuclear weapons. And both leaders basically said they're on the same page with each other. So what do we take from all that?
Well, frankly, the devil's in the details when it comes to wrangling an international coalition to apply economic pressure on Iran. We've heard this tune out of Moscow before, and the Russians, I think, in principle, are on board with serious sanctions against Iran. But they diverge with the White House in terms of their perception of the immediacy of the threat. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev has said publicly that he doesn't think that there is a looming threat posed by Iran, both in terms of its nuclear program and in terms of its ballistic missiles. And Russian officials in general have tended to take a fairly sanguine view of Iran and its nuclear development, probably in no small measure because Russia itself has been one of the key enablers of the Iranian nuclear program over the last decade and a half or so. So the Kremlin, I think, in principle, understands that there's a problem. In practice, I think it's going to be very hard to get their cooperation for real, meaningful pressure.
So do you get the sense, Ilan, that Russia cares if Iran has nukes, or it's just not worried because they don't see themselves as a target?
I think at the end of the day, the Russians do care whether Iran gets nukes, but they think, first of all, that the day is further away than the United States does. And also, there's a lot of benefits to Russia itself to be gleaned in the interim. It's useful to remember that Russia is responsible for a lot of Iran's nuclear development. Russia exports 40% of the world's nuclear technology, and so it understands that there's a market there. And if Iran goes nuclear, it becomes a showpiece for what the Russians can do for other aspiring weapon states. And that's obviously a factor. And there's also the issue of the seriousness of the American approach. Since the second term of the Bush administration, there hasn't been a lot of faith in Moscow that the United States really means what it says, that it's really committed to pressuring Iran to give up its nuclear ambitions, either economically or diplomatically. And if there's no such sense in Moscow, then there's an inclination to believe that it's okay to conduct business as usual.
Some are saying in response to what we saw today, Ilan, that it's proof that the Obama administration didn't get what it wanted from Russia when it decided to scrap the missile defense system designed for Poland and the Czech Republic. Others are saying, well, that's way too soon. You don't know necessarily what the long-term ramifications are of that on our relations with Russia. What's your sense?
Well, I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. It's quite clear that the Obama administration showed its hand too early when it comes to missile defense. Back in March, February-March, President Obama sent a private letter, subsequently leaked by the Kremlin to the international media, about the administration's willingness to walk away from Poland and the Czech Republic in return for cooperation on Iran. And because that letter was presented, it became clear to the Russians very early on that this administration was not willing to pursue missile defense in the same way that its predecessor was. And as a result, missile defense came to be viewed in Russia as a bargaining chip. If the Obama administration is willing to walk away from it, as a result of expecting concessions from Russia, Russia's willing to pocket that concession and then see what else it can get in return. So missile defense has been less of a bargaining chip on the part of the administration as something that they've given away with very little to show for it in return.
Last question on this before we move to Afghanistan. What should the Obama administration be doing differently in order to get Russia on board, or another maneuver perhaps in order to stop or slow down the Iranian nuclear program?
Well, when it comes to international diplomacy, Russia is the key to a lot of things, because the general view is that if Russia signs on to serious sanctions on a multilateral level, the only country left standing on its own will be China. And China is really the one that matters, because China is such a large energy client of the Islamic Republic. And the Chinese don't want to be resisting sanctions on their own. They don't want to be perceived as obstructionists. So if the Russians can fall into place, then this wrangling of an international coalition becomes much, much easier for Washington. But in terms of real pressure, the center of gravity has never been at the United Nations, at the Security Council, because that's an institution that isn't really built to deal with this type of crisis. What we're looking at instead, and I think you see a great deal of positive movement in Congress, is pressuring the sort of intrinsic vulnerabilities in the Iranian economy. And those have to do with the Iranian energy sector. It has to do with Iran's dependence on gasoline for the continuing function of its economy. And this is something that Congress has spent a lot of time and attention on over the last 6-8 months or so, but it's something that they're discovering that the White House is dragging its feet on. There's legislation that's now winding its way through Congress that the White House has not embraced the way they promised they would on the campaign trail, because they think it'll complicate negotiations with Tehran. But if we don't have that type of pressure, then, really, frankly, we don't have enough leverage on Iran to make them cooperate when we do engage them in negotiations.
Ilan, let's move over to Afghanistan now. And, of course, the pressure remains on President Obama from many circles, including some Democrats now, to make a decision relatively quickly on what the strategy will be going forward, and especially on troop recommendations from General McChrystal that could be as high as 60,000. And in reality, you obviously have just written a book about being serious about taking on radical Islam and defeating it. What's the smart move for the president here?
Well, I think the president's on the horns of a very serious dilemma, because rhetorically, he styled Afghanistan as the antithesis to Iraq. Iraq was a war of choice, and Afghanistan is the good war. But now he's facing a situation where conditions in Afghanistan are deteriorating. There's not a lot of light at the end of the tunnel, and there's a very costly, potentially costly, both politically and in terms of manpower, troop increase that's on the table. And so, you know, I think they're trying to split the baby in some way. And trying to figure out a middle way that they can simply muddle through in Afghanistan. And unfortunately, that's a really suboptimal strategy, because early on, the administration showed a great deal of promise when it came out with its Afghanistan plan, which wasn't just a plan for Afghanistan. It was called AFPAC for a reason. It recognized that a lot of the problems that are taking place in Afghanistan actually originate next door in Pakistan, where the Taliban were created and nurtured, where there's a lot of rampant Islamic radicalism that migrates across the border, where elements of al-Qaeda still receive aid and comfort. And so a lot of the problems that we're experiencing in Afghanistan are derivative. They originate in Pakistan. So what we're engaging in right now is a little bit of a hold-the-line type of strategy. We can certainly increase our troop levels in Afghanistan, but until we figure out a serious strategy for dealing with the Islamic radicalism emanating from Pakistan, we're not going to do more than that. Afghanistan is not going to flip unless the more enduring, fundamental, underlying problems dealing with radical Islam in Pakistan are addressed.
Last question, what do you expect the president to do?
I think it's very hard for President Obama to, after all this political back and forth, to uncritically accept General McChrystal's request for 40,000 additional troops. I think there's probably a troop increase in the offing, but it's likely to be smaller. It's likely to be more tactical. And the way you can tell where this is heading is in the rhetoric the White House has been using. In the last week or so, the White House dialogue has shifted from a discussion of Afghanistan as a conflict that pits the United States and its coalition partners against the Taliban as essentially the battleground of a fight between the West and al-Qaeda. And that connotes, I think, a more limited conflict, a conflict where the U.S. has less at stake. It's okay for the Taliban to stick around as long as they don't help al-Qaeda. And so I think, shapes the direction of where we're going. We're not looking for wholesale victory in Afghanistan. We're looking for some sort of tactical gain.
So we'll keep watching and see when that decision comes down. Ilan, as always, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Ilan Berman is Vice President for Policy at the American Foreign Policy Council. His new book is Winning the Long War, Retaking the Offensive Against Radical Islam. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.